Hi, this is Exposé with your host, Mike Russo, discussing issues of national importance for the next half hour. I have both an email address and a post office box for you to send in comments to. My email is mikerussoexpose@yahoo.com, Russo spelled R-U-S-S-O, and my post office box number is 13140, Denver, Colorado, 80201. I'll give those addresses again at the end of the program. I have a very prominent guest coming on in a moment who is a very courageous person. He is an attorney who used to work for the U.S. Department of Justice and led the effort in bringing to justice the new Black Panther Party for its voter intimidation during the 2008 election in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. I've been told that since his resignation, he's been active in trying to clean up voter registration in 16 states and has been attempting to thwart the George Soros-funded Secretary of State project, which led to such travesties of law that occurred when Al Franken stole the senatorial election in Minnesota. But let's hear J. Christian Adams' story directly from him. So welcome to Exposé, Mr. Adams. Tell us about yourself, where you grew up, went to school, what you do now.
I'm sorry, say again, please.
Tell us about yourself, a little self-introduction, you know, where you were born, grew up, went to school, and what you're doing right now.
Sure. I'm a Steelers fan, so I grew up in Pittsburgh.
Okay.
I went to law school, University of South Carolina. And right now I'm doing a whole bunch of different things. As you mentioned, I'm working on making sure that the voter rolls are accurate and don't have too many dead people on them, and representing people practicing election law around the country. A lot of folks who are interested in seeing their elections run with integrity and with propriety.
I see. You have your own website, too, or at least you have a website with, pajamasmedia.com?
So yeah, people want to read Pajamas Media is a, I'm a regular contributor there. They are a news source. It's sort of like National Review or, it's a great place to find out what's going on. You can read my columns at pajamasmedia.com. But I also cover election law at my own website, which is electionlawcenter.com.
Oh, really?
That's all one word.
Electionlawcenter.com. Excellent. Okay. Well, tell the audience what happened that led you to resign from the Justice Department. What happened?
Well, on Election Day in 2008, armed members of the new Black Panther Party were standing in front of a poll in Philadelphia, in uniforms with weapons, shouting racial slurs at individuals and blocking the entrance to the poll. The Justice Department, when I was there, filed a lawsuit under the Voting Rights Act saying that this was illegal voter intimidation. The Black Panthers never answered the lawsuit. They never appeared in court. They didn't do anything. But what happened was, the Justice Department under Eric Holder dismissed the lawsuit against the Panthers, just threw it out. They didn't even go forward on getting the remedy against most of the Panthers. So a lot of people wondered why, and they started investigating, including members of Congress and the Civil Rights Commission, which is a federal agency set up to protect civil rights. They issued subpoenas to some of the lawyers on the case, including myself, and the Justice Department instructed us to ignore those subpoenas. But after a while, I didn't feel I had a legal right to do so, so I resigned my job, and I testified in front of the Civil Rights Commission. And this last Friday, one of the other lawyers, Christopher Coates, who was the head of the voting section, defied his superiors, and he testified in front of the Civil Rights Commission, and he's actually still an attorney at the Justice Department.
Yeah, you know, I just read about that in the October 4th Weekly Standard. It mentioned that. that there was an edict from the Justice Department saying that they did not want him to testify. And he voluntarily, he sent a letter to the Civil Rights Commission volunteering to testify. And anyway, we'll talk a little more about that later. But anyway, the next question I have was, I've heard practically nothing about this case from the mainstream media. No New York Times, no Washington Post. And in fact, were it not for Fox News, I would probably know nothing about it. So this seems to me to be a really important issue for people to know about. Why isn't the media reporting it?
Well, they are now, thankfully. One of the reasons they hadn't been for a long time is it sort of is contrary to everything we're told about civil rights. I mean, that's why people hated the case so much, is because it stands in opposition to the storyline that we have heard for so many decades, that there's always a particular wrongdoer on racial issues and there's always a particular victim. So I think a lot of the people in the media don't like the new storyline of the Black Panther case, and so they don't want to report on it. But after the testimony of Chris Coates on Friday, who said that he knows firsthand, and he named names, that the Civil Rights Division has a racially unequal law enforcement policy, it's going to be very hard for the media to ignore it. And in fact, it was on the front page of the Washington Post on Saturday.
No kidding. No kidding. Anyway, well, that was actually one of my questions was, what exactly did Chris Coates say? What exactly did he say? He said that the law was not being applied equally, as a matter of fact. It was not being applied. He said a lot of things there, which raised a lot of eyebrows. And these, by the way, are things that you said. And he mostly confirmed everything that you said. And I think one of the ways that Coates and yourself are now being believed is in this Weekly Standard, this October 4th issue, it mentioned that a judicial watch, as a result of a Freedom of Information Act request, obtained a document log showing that Attorney General Eric Holder's top aides were pulling all the strings, that the Obama political appointees were running the show. So I guess this is your opinion, too. It was top people. It was top people running this thing.
Well, this is another reason why the case is so critically important. The first reason, of course, which I mentioned, is it deals with the equal enforcement of the law and, frankly, the rule of law, whether or not we're a nation that believes in equal protection. But the second reason it's so important, and that's what you just mentioned, is for an entire year, the Justice Department has been telling Congress, has been telling the Civil Rights Commission, and has been telling the American people that the decision to dismiss the Black Panther case was just a disagreement among civil servants, lowly career people, and they just had a difference of opinion.
Right, I read that.
The bombshell that came out on Monday of last week was the Judicial Watch Freedom of Information logs, which show for the last year the Justice Department, including the Attorney General in front of Congress, including the number three man at the Justice Department, have not been telling the truth about who really dismissed the Black Panther case. And that's just an astonishing revelation, one that I never dreamed could have been the case, but sadly it is.
Yeah. I recently retired from working for the federal government. I'm pretty old. I've worked for the government for 40 years, and all of those years were with the U.S. Department of the Interior. And I was very proud to be working for them. I was proud. So the incidents like the one you're describing make me sick, especially because for about 10 of my 40 years with the federal government, I had a little side job. I guess you were for 5 years with the government, maybe few years, but anyway, they had these things called collateral duty where it's not your main job. My main job was I was an environmental specialist. I was in charge of grants for all the Western states and tribes. That was my big job, but I would spend maybe 15% of my time doing something way different that the government needed to have done, but they could not afford to bring on a whole lot of extra people to do all those extra jobs. And for For 10 of those years, it involved EEO, Equal Employment Opportunity. 5, I was an EEO counselor. Another 5, I was the Hispanic Employment Program Manager for my agency. Even though I'm not Hispanic, still they had nobody there who was Hispanic. So that's what I did. So I really got into that thing. And I, all those 10 years, I was in Washington, D.C. And being in Washington, D.C., the people who trained me were from the Office of Personnel Management in Washington, and they also were top officials with the U.S. Department of the Interior. I mean, with some of the big heavyweights, train me in EEO. I must have heard about 100 times at least that EEO is for everyone. Everyone is covered by EEO. Everyone. Everyone. It's not excluded. So I just don't understand where this came from. Where in the world did this came from where you are unequally applying the law, white people versus people of color? Where did that, I don't understand it. Can you explain that? Where did this originate?
Well, you know, that's a good question. And I know Chris Coates and I firsthand saw a lot of the hostility toward equal enforcement, and it comes from a couple of places. The first one is a entitlement view that the civil rights laws, the voting rights laws in particular, were born out of the bloodshed of African Americans in the South, and the laws were designed to protect them. I have an article up at Pajamas Media right now, at pajamasmedia.com, that actually quotes some law professors, as well as some other columnists in the last couple of days, plainly telling you that the law doesn't apply to protect white people. I mean, these are law professors at American University, a man named Alan Lichtman, who is also a consultant to the U.S. Justice Department. They don't believe that the laws were born out of protecting white people, so therefore, why start now?
That's amazing.
Another reason is, as I mentioned earlier, it sort of breaks up their storyline that only one group of people can be bad and only one group of people can ever be the victims. Incidents like what happened in Philadelphia tell us that every race has their bad apples, and the laws are meant to stop all bad apples, not just some.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Every race has stories of discrimination. Weren't the Irish ever discriminated against? In 1929, 6 Italian Americans were hung, etc., etc., etc. The law is supposed to cover everybody. And if law professors and government officials disagree, then what they need to do is try to change the law to something that they do agree with. But as of right now, what they're doing is not applying the law the way it was meant to be applied, and it is illegal. And I hope at some point some of these officials end up paying for what they've done. And thanks to you, maybe, in fact, that will occur. But Christian, tell us a little bit more. I just heard from somebody, just verbally, you were working with 16 states to clean up their registration rolls, and this was something authorized under Motor Voter that was passed, and was it passed what, in 1996 under Bill Clinton, and it gave citizens the capability to bring lawsuits to help clean up register. When people died, they got off the registration rolls, et cetera. Tell us a little bit about your efforts doing that.
Yeah, the Motor Voter Act is designed to make sure everybody can get registered, but it's also designed to make sure only eligible people get registered. So if there's dead people or ineligible felons or people who have moved away, they're not supposed to be on the voter rolls. And it turns out that about, if you look at publicly available information, I determined that there's about 16 states. Actually, Colorado is one with a huge problem, but that's another story. 16 states that have problems with their integrity of their voter rolls. And we had to send them notice letters before we could sue them. And we sent those states notice letters and are processing the information now. A group called Americans for Restoration are very interested in this. They have a website, which is linked at my website, and it's called AmericansForRestoration.com, and they're working on this issue to try to bring integrity to voter rolls. But like I said, Colorado is a mess right now, and it goes back to litigation that started in 2008.
Well, a couple of years ago, I decided to help out during one of the campaigns. And to do that, I had to have training. And the training was really interesting because they went over the proof that a person could provide to show that they, in fact, were eligible to vote in Colorado. And it was totally absurd. You can bring a utility bill in with your name on it. And that was accepted as proof. I mean, you mean to tell me that an illegal alien or somebody else would not get a bill from anybody? It was just totally absurd. But anyway, so I see some of the stuff with this Colorado problem, but do you think, is there any possibility with these 16 states that things might be cleaned up by this election day or no?
Well, it's hard to know. That will be determined. I mean, some of the states I don't think are as much of a problem as the public data show. Like South Dakota, for example, they got a notice letter, but it turns out they have a law that lets you register to vote there if you are an RVer. And so you're never there, even though you show up on the voter rolls, you don't show up on the census. But Colorado got sued back in 2008 by a sort of a left-wing group to stop them from taking people off the voter rolls in Colorado.
No kidding.
And there's been very contentious litigation in Colorado that is preventing the state from cleaning up their voter rolls the way they need to. And so you guys in Colorado are going to suffer more than most because of this problem.
Yeah. I how in the world that is not reported on the front page of the newspapers, if people are not saying outrage, and I just don't understand it. I just don't understand why, even if it's your own party or affiliation, it's cheating, it's thievery, why people are not standing up like you have stood up by resigning from justice. I just don't understand it. The people don't want honest elections. Why in the world would you want dishonest elections? My God. But anyway, the problem I see with the registration, over-registration, people being registered who have died long ago. Great country, United States. And even after you die, you can still vote. Amazing. It's an amazing country. But anyway, the problem is that with so many people registered who should not be registered because they're no longer around, they moved away, they died, whatever, is that then you can have a lot of voter fraud, overvote, and you can't tell because you have all these people that are registered, and you have, even though you have a lot of people maybe fraudulently voting twice and three times, whatever, you can't pick it up because you have more people who have been registered. I guess that's why it's so important with this registration thing. Because otherwise you can easily tell. It's evidence that, in fact, there's fraud. If there's more votes than people registered. I guess that's what it's mostly all about.
Well, that's obviously something that could happen. I believe that we should comply with the law regardless of what the outcome is. If it means, you know, it stops voter fraud, fine. But I think there's a value in compliance with the law. But I do agree that there are instances where dead people have voted. I can name one person, and I cover this in my blog, electionlawcenter.com. There's instance after instance after instance of ineligible votes taking place, and you could see that if you click the voter fraud tag. But let me give you one example. A guy named Lafayette Kenyon, he just pled guilty about 3 weeks ago for voting for his dead son. Lafayette Kenyon is about 80 years old. He's a con artist up in Oregon, and he voted for his dead son in the 2008 presidential election. And of course, Lafayette Kenyon also voted for himself. So this man got two votes. Lafayette Kenyon is not an exception. There are many, many other Lafayette Kenyons out there, and they're taking advantage of the voter rolls not being fixed. But, you know, like I said, I think the law has an answer for this, and we need to follow the law.
I see. Sure. Now, I also was told, I didn't read, but I was told that you have been involved in trying to thwart the George Soros instigated, funded Secretary of State project. And if that's true, or if you are in fact involved, tell us what it is and tell us what you're doing about it.
Well, I will tell you, I don't have much to say about that. Yeah. Obviously, the George Soros Secretary of State project was a concerted effort to elect secretaries of state over the last couple of election cycles, recognizing how important it is to have secretaries of state of one ideology, and it was largely successful. You've got one out in Colorado, as a matter of fact. Your secretary of state out there has been very problematic, whether it comes to not protecting military voters, whether it comes to not complying with the new MOVE Act that guarantees a ballot get to military voters in time, or whether it involves not cleaning up the voter rolls. Secretary of State of Colorado is one of, frankly, the worst secretaries of state in the country.
I see. Okay, and what can happen is, Minnesota, I guess, is the biggest example of what could happen and really go wrong when you have a Secretary of State that's not keeping everybody honest. Somebody can win an election who really did not win that election, and that's what can happen.
Yeah, I have an article at Pajamas Media about this, and that is, I think voter fraud is common, but I don't think it frequently affects the outcome of elections. But that doesn't matter that it doesn't frequently affect the outcome of elections. Just having fraud corrupts the integrity of the process. And I discussed this at length at Pajamas Media with a lot of examples, people voting twice, other guilty pleas, lots of things like that.
I see. Christian, we have a couple more minutes. And I thought at this point you might like to tell our audience some more stuff about what you're doing and how they could help. What could they help do to keep things honest? How could they help?
There's lots of ways. I mean, they can become a poll watcher. They can participate. They can, you know, learn about, how their local election official is doing purges, meaning are they checking to see if dead people are taken off the rolls? How often do they do it? I mean, getting involved is the first step in all of this. Caring about what goes on and not just listening and grumbling when you hear a show like this. You know, get up and do something. Go volunteer to be a poll watcher on election day. They always need them. Go work at the polls if you don't want to watch for a party. Go participate in the electoral process and bring a measure of integrity to it.
I see countering this is the fact that some people are extremely partisan. And as long as their side is the one that's benefiting, they don't really care a whole lot about the fraud and everything else. They don't really care that much. And I don't know how you get around something like that, saying, hey, you know, having fair elections benefits everybody. Actually, it even improves your candidates and your party, keeping them honest.
Yeah. We're a country that was built on respect for the fair and square. And what matters most is following the law and ensuring there's integrity in the process. Let the chips fall where they will. Once you've got integrity and the laws being followed, that's all that matters.
Yeah. Well, maybe one day we keep on at it. We keep on finding out how the crooks get away with what they do and figuring out how to stop them from doing that. You know, maybe one day. Anyway, okay. Well, Mr. J. Christian Adams, it has been an honor for you to be on my show. I appreciate your being on my show. It's been a pleasure. And I thank you very much for being my guest here today on Expose. You take care.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Bye-bye.
You're welcome. Bye. And thank you, audience, for spending some of your time with me this morning. Next week, Dr. Michael Smith from the Life Extension Foundation will be my guest. We'll discuss ways to minimize the risk of getting Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, dementia, mild cognitive impairment, and any other neurological disorder. So please tune in, because there are things you can do. If you happen to have a company or product you'd like to advertise on Exposé, simply send me an email or snail mail, and I'll contact you. You can email me at MikeRussoExpose@yahoo.com, or if you prefer written mail, you can write me at Post Office Box 13140, Denver, Colorado, 80201, and give me any comments. So until next week at 7:30 a.m. on KNUS 710 Radio, this is Exposé with Mike Russo. Have a good week.